Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words. 2017 is off to a rad start. I've been interviewing a lot of people behind the scenes. It's nice to have the frontmen or sidemen in bands on stage on these little interviews, but there's a lot of people that are pulling strings that I wanted to make more noteworthy in the public eye. So today we have Atreyu Rykin, who is an artist manager, has a lot of PR experience, and works for your favorite alternative magazine, Alternative Press. So I'm very excited to have him on, and he actually used to work behind the scenes of the band I was in, Greenlight Theory. So this is going to be a very interesting interview. Normally I use the word interesting to describe an ugly painting, but this is actually interesting. So next week, we are interviewing Todd Koval, and like I've said, he manages artists, but he also manages his wife. I can't imagine managing my wife for anything. I mean, she doesn't really listen to me. So I guess it's kind of like managing artists, you know? You say all this stuff, and they're like, and then they don't listen. And then when there's a pitfall or something, it's your fault. And I'm like, dude. And they're like, which if you have a stenographer, I don't know if you're going to be able to stenographize and put in closed captioning. The following week, we have Greg Long from We Are Triumphant Records, and he also manages several artists, including Blossom, who you might be hearing about quite soon, an Australian group that has some really catchy melodies. The following week, we've got Matt Vigliotti from Standby Records, and that label actually gave Black Veil Brides their start. And he is also an artist manager for bands like GP and Call Me Charisma. And then the following week, we've got Patrick Walford from the Adobe family, who hosts Rock the Walls. He's a Canadian, and he listens to a lot of heavier music. So that should be interesting. Adobe interviewing Adobe. Who knows? Maybe we'll learn something, or maybe you won't learn a single thing. I can't speak for the future, but I'm excited about it. And then the following week's, we're going to be interviewing a bunch more people. I used to focus the opening segment on the interview on my management company, but I want to focus a little bit on the show. I'm really happy with the new Candy Heart songs, though. I'm happy with the new Mirror Eyes songs. They should have a big announcement soon. Film Speed has a huge interview today, actually, with Relics Magazine, so props to that. That's kind of usually a jam band scene magazine, so I'm flattered that they even care. Boomtown Crooks, I'm going to actually be going to see them later this week, and I should have an announcement shortly about a rapper. It's usually not my style of music, but I fell in love with this guy's voice and what he has to say, because it's not bling bling, know what I'm saying, rap, it's substantive. So stick around, Waldman's Words, every single Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm flattered that there are people that care, including Dan Brink. So much love. Stay tuned. Enjoy these commercials. I hope you enjoyed those commercials. Welcome back to Waldman's Words with Atreyu Rykin. Say hello.
Hey, Scott Waldman. How's it going?
See, you're one of those people. Everyone says my full name. People don't call me Scott.
I've been listening.
Sorry?
I've been listening to past episodes.
Oh.
Your response.
You know what? It's nice to meet one of the 10 of millions of people listening to the show. Yeah, no, people just do that. I don't know. I've spoken to you on the phone a bunch. I've never called you. I've never even said the word Rykin until now. Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no one's ever called me by my full name in a like greeting, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you have a more unconventional first name. My name, for some reason, it rolls off the tongue just with like the full name. And
definitely,
I mean, my wife doesn't call me Scott Waldman, but everyone else does. So there you go. So Atreyu Rykin, thank you so much for doing this show. How did we meet?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh my God. You were one of the people I wanted on since the very beginning, because I really wanted this to be an informative and educational show. And I think that you, with your UCB degree, which is, I think there's only two schools in America, two public schools that are ranked higher than Michigan, yours being one of them. So good for you. How did we meet?
We met, I want to say first online. I was running a blog called Restless Press, and we were featuring your old band, Green Light Theory.
Yes.
Although we may have informally met outside of a show.
I think it was Man Overboard at the Roxy, but I could
be mistaken. Yeah, I think I saw you guys play before outside like a Wonder Years show in Hollywood, but never actually talked to you guys. But
I mean, we were really standoffish with our acoustic guitars. No.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I believe we met outside a Man Overboard show at the Roxy in like 2014.
And you were a student at the time. And
I was, yeah. Yeah, we had like just featured you on a blog I was running with. I was running like my own kind of personal music blog with some friends from online, and then was working at a like UC Berkeley music magazine.
I definitely want to talk about that in a bit, because Berkeley is a very historic area for a lot of the bands that I worship, like Op Ivy and Green Day. And I actually just read Larry Livermore's book, How to Ruin or Run a Record Label. Did you read that?
I have not yet, but I'm familiar with it. I need to get on that.
It's great. It's really, really – I read it on my honeymoon, and I learned a lot. And he's a very snarky guy, so it's a good read. It's quick. So we met that way, and you actually managed Green Light Theory for a little bit, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did.
And I always thought that you were a sharp tack. And so you grew up in California because – I don't know. When I think of Pismo Beach, I don't think you're specifically from Pismo, but is it called the Central Coast where you're from, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like it's referred to as like a five cities area, more generally called the Central Coast. That includes like San Luis Obispo, which is more known for its college town.
Right. And SLO Pismo. Brew.
Yeah, more farmy, beachy suburbs.
Well, Pismo Beach had, I think, the best seafood I've had in California. We were there.
Where did you go?
Dude, you were the one who name-checked it. It's one word. Say the one that you could think of. It was fried. It was a fried place. I had a bread bowl with New England clam chowder. And, oh, God, what was the name of it? I should Google it. Because, like I said, you should know this.
I should know this. Why am I blanking on the name?
No, it's okay. I mean, this is a really high-pressure interview.
In a while.
Let's see. I'm going to Google
definitely
it.
Splash Cafe.
Splash. Yes. Dude, that place was dope. And it was super cheap. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and it was packed. Everyone there was in a really good mood. That's what I noticed about the Central Coast when I was there, is like everyone just seemed really – I don't know if they were all high, but everyone just seemed really happy. Everyone.
Oprah did name San Luis Obispo America's happiest city.
Oh, really? That's
awesome. Yeah, she did. She came when I was like in high school and did like a piece there.
Did everyone win a new car when she did that?
No, unfortunately not. It was mainly because the city of San Luis Obispo doesn't allow public smoking and has no fast food drive-thrus, and Oprah loved both of those things.
Oh, wow.
So,
you know, it's usually a lot of cities don't allow fast food, like Beverly Hills, for example. Doesn't allow fast food drive-thrus. Just it's honestly the real reason is to keep minorities out. But
right, like I felt like there were some ulterior motives with littering that, but
it's to keep undesirables away. I mean, chances are
it's
like
a little classist to me, but it's a nice area to live.
If you could find a Del Taco in Beverly Hills with a 24-hour drive-through, I will buy you a taco. I will. So
yeah,
I'd find it. You, dude, that's honestly should be your mission. So UC Berkeley, it's a very conservative school, right?
Oh yeah, I felt like I really couldn't speak my mind there. No free speech whatsoever.
None whatsoever. I heard that guy Milo was really stoked on, not Milo Goes to College, but that Milo guy.
Yeah, it's been a week for Berkeley.
Yeah, Berkeley's been.
Isn't threatening our funding. No, not at all.
Oh my God. Well, yeah, that guy. He's a super liberal president. So it's really good to have him in office for that stuff. So I hope that the listeners of the show understand sarcasm, because sometimes if I send out a tweet or a status and I say something, my mom's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, Mom, I'm being sarcastic. She's like, it doesn't translate. And I don't know why I'm doing my mom as an 87-year-old Jewish mother from somewhere, but she's not. So Berkeley, tell me about that. Did that really – was one of the reasons you went to school there because of the liberal atmosphere and the music community? Like, I'm really curious for, like, a punk rock kid growing up in the Central Coast, like, what appealed you to Berkeley?
Oh, totally. I mean, the music scene, I grew up, like, watching old videos of, like, Green Day and Opi via Gilman and have never gotten to go before. I didn't get to spend a lot of time in the Bay Area. And so when I got the acceptance letter, I kind of knew, like, I definitely wanted to come to Berkeley. I mean, the education was great, and I really valued everything that the university's been doing, but just living, I wanted to live in the East Bay, I think, a little bit more than I wanted to go to the actual college.
I mean, that makes sense.
But I ended up loving the college and all of that as well. But, yeah, I needed to get to a more populated area with a little more of a thriving music scene, and Berkeley seemed perfect.
Does the Central Coast have a scene? I mean, I know that when my old band, Lido Beach, before Green Light Theory, we played a show at SLO, and it was packed. I mean, granted, I believe so. I mean, we had to play a lot of covers too, but it was very vibrant in that regard. But it seems, I don't know how many bands have come from that area. Is there anyone that I would know about?
Night Riots right now, who are on Sumerian.
Oh,
kind of big ones.
Okay, I know them.
And they're like some old, like, they've been around for, oh god, probably pushing 10 years, and they're all still super young. They've been playing since like middle school, I think.
With different incarnations of it,
starting to break, but because they're still a pretty relatively new band in like our scene, I would say.
Right.
But other than that, not a whole lot. I mean, there's a lot of good music out there right now, and there are some DIY spots, but it's a little contentious. There's not a lot of venues outside of the college town itself, and the college town is kind of half retired people, half college students. So there's kind of a war with noise complaints going on, where venues are getting shut down left and right.
Oh god, that's not so good.
There are some cool things going on, like Robert Ocho, Ernie Ball is based out of San Luis Obispo, so there's a guy, Robert, who just opened up a warehouse, which has been putting on some cool shows. Slow Brew closed for a bit, and they just relocated. I think they had Surfer Blood there last night, and they're starting to bring some shows back.
Oh wow, that's good for them.
So I have hope, but right now the DIY scene in particular is pretty fragmented.
I mean, it's usually a B market spot. I mean, obviously it's not it's not like an SF or an LA, but I would put it in the same, I guess, sentences like a Santa Barbara scene or something like that. And obviously
it fits pretty much with that. I mean, it's on the 101. It's a little farther from LA than Santa Barbara is, and it's equally far from the Bay. So unless you're taking the 101, there's really no reason to come through it on a tour.
Right.
But it's, I feel like when I was growing up, it definitely had more packages coming through. Like I grew up seeing Alkaline Trio and the Bouncing Souls at the Brew.
Oh, cool.
And there's not as much these days, but they're building some venues out kind of in the country to escape the noise complaints.
That makes sense.
So
I mean,
we'll see what happens with that.
I mean, I also bet that area, a lot of the venues are 21 and up, which aren't very accommodating to the all ages stuff, just because it's a college town. I mean, when I went to school in Ann Arbor, like there was a historic venue called the Blind Pig that was the same way, and you couldn't get in unless you were 21. And I mean, there were bands. I saw OK Go there, and it's just,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And this is before the treadmill video. So anyway, okay, yeah. So Berkeley, you got your degree, but as you said in the beginning, Restless Press, that's what you were doing. And that's how I knew your name. So how was that? I mean, I bet you've interviewed a lot of bands and reviewed several records, EPs in the quote-unquote scene.
Yeah, I started that my freshman year, and I played in bands in SLO in high school and stuff, and came to the Bay and wanted to kind of work in music, but didn't really know how to get my foot in the door, especially in the Bay Area where the music industry is a little different from your LA and New York scene.
Would you say it's more elitist and smug, like the South Park episode of San Francisco, where they all like get fascinated by their own farts?
I would say San Francisco is, for sure, and I don't want to like talk too much trash on San Francisco. I've just noticed that in the music scene in particular. I feel like the East Bay is a lot more open-minded.
Okay.
It's really weird because a lot of people clump the Bay Area as one big unit, but it's very divided by that bridge.
Oh my god, Oakland and SF and Berkeley are like different countries. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, they're all super you know, your super typical liberal Bay Area, but like the music scenes and like the people who come out to the shows, like it's so much harder to book
right
in San Francisco than it is Oakland for whatever reason. But yeah, there's a little more elitism there, I think. But other than that, yeah, I just wanted to kind of get a foot in the door, and I figured doing it myself was the best way to get started.
It's the only way to get started,
and
man.
And starting that blog actually introduced me to the people who wanted to start a music magazine for the campus itself. So it kind of grew into that as an offshoot of Restless Press. And yeah, just kind of built the blog up, tried to get as many viewers as possible so I could actually have some credibility to interview artists and cover festivals and work on photography, and also help my friends like contribute to a website they wanted to work for.
So I guess tell me a little bit about the magazine at school and also the photography. I totally forgot that you're an accomplished photographer. So I make these detailed outlines, but it's good.
The magazine started probably 6 months after Restless Press started, and I just kind of like answered a Facebook group request and like met up with a couple of people at a coffee shop. We were joining another magazine that was like a network of different colleges, that it was a multi-college music magazine called Resound. And we started for a semester there, put on our own shows, kind of just did a Berkeley column of that larger thing, and then realized we wanted to do it on our own, so we moved all of our content to a new site, called it the Berkeley B-Side, and started and like filed to become an actual like school-sponsored club, and it's still going on today. I don't think anyone I know is still working in it. I think I've completely missed.
You're an old man,
or
dude.
Past that cycle of students, but
you are old.
Still alive, and
it's just what happens. You're old as fuck, dude. I mean, that's just how it is. When my high school, the people who teach there, I don't know how many of them were teaching when I was there. I mean, I graduated when Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. So it's been a minute, but
yeah.
So you've written many, many articles, and you've posted many, many blogs and photography. Did you find yourself doing that a lot in the Berkeley scene?
Yeah. Another reason I kind of got more involved with the B-Side was because I wasn't really focusing on local music. I was just kind of going to tours I wanted to go to that were coming through the Bay Area. And so with the B-Side, I started to focus a little more on local acts, local musicians of different genres outside of my kind of Warped Tour realm at the time.
Right.
And it was cool to be with like people of much more diverse population, because I started Restless Press with my friends and we were all pretty like-minded, and on the B-side I was introduced to all kinds of music I never would have listened to in the first place, and I thought that was a really great experience. And we put on a lot of shows with bands I would have never think to hit up or look for in my neighborhood, you know.
Were any specific things that you were introduced to via this format, anything stick out and kind of take over your playlists?
I really got into like a little more like electronic based indie. I got super into like Toro y Moi and his particular side project Les Sins, who came to campus a few times and we posted some stuff for them. So I definitely explored more of like alternative electronic through that.
When I think of alternative electronic, for some reason, all I think about is Adam and his package. I don't know if you're familiar with Adam and his package.
I'm just thinking of like not EDM, but like how to phrase that better, because I'm terrible with nomenclature. But,
no, yeah. I mean, I hate labeling stuff, because I don't know, if you call a band a pop punk band and they have a song that isn't pop punk, it's just like you're limiting yourself by doing that. So I get it. Nomenclature. And that must be the bane of your writing existence, having to do that.
Trying not to offend anyone with an album review is the biggest challenge.
And trying not to offend the entire region of San Francisco when you talk. Listen, I can say this. I love San Francisco. In fact, I would definitely put it in my top 10 cities in the country. But I had no idea. Like, I always thought that New York City was the most expensive. San Francisco.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Like a one-bedroom apartment in that area, it's like between $3,000 and $4,000 for a one bedroom apartment. And it's not like an incredible one bedroom apartment with like crazy amenities. Like, you don't wake up in the morning with a foot massage. It's like you wake up in the morning in your bed and you stare at the window, which is probably 3 feet away from your bed. It doesn't make any sense. But it's all the Silicon Valley people.
Sorry, go on.
No, no, I just say it's the Silicon Valley people. You go. Your turn.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Sorry.
No. You're doing great. A lot of times there's some people that I'm interviewing that just keep on going and doesn't leave me any room to interject. So I give you full permission to interrupt me, and I will be so rude to you, man. I'm going to be so rude.
For sure.
Thank you.
It's just like I dabbled with the idea of like moving to San Francisco, and even in the most dangerous parts of the Tenderloin, you can't find a studio for less than $2,000. Which is just – I don't know how anyone actually lives there.
That's what I say about New York City. I mean, because people always say LA, it's so expensive. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I mean, there's plenty of places that aren't. It's just the expensive part is driving and filling up on gas. But, you know, public transportation's getting better. Speaking of which, where do you live right now?
I'm back in San Luis Obispo. And right now I'm in Seattle on vacation.
Oh, dope.
Going to see your boy Fish tonight.
Yeah. He gets flown out, man, like first class, flown out. But is it emo night there? I know Acceptance is a part of it, right?
Yeah, it's. I think the Riff is putting it on with Acceptance and a few special guests. I didn't know Fish was super involved with the Riff's team, but
he DJs there like every night. He's usually their guest DJ. And speaking of, you know, nights out, last night. Well, it won't be last night when this airs because it's going to air a week later. But last night. At Emo Night in Los Angeles, from first to last, reunited with Skrillex Sunny for the first time since 2007.
I heard. That is so wild.
That's insane. That's crazy. But you're going to be there tonight just kind of chilling, or are you going to be working? Because you said you're on like kind of a vacation, and you're taking this call, so respect.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a workcation. I'm meeting with Seattle was mostly not work type stuff, and I just found out like after I'd booked my tickets that Fish was going to be here as well. But I'm in Seattle till Friday, and then going down to Portland to see some friends and also meet with a couple of bands.
I'm going to be in Portland too in March. I'm going to be going actually for my birthday. So if you recommend any breweries, I mean you're very familiar with breweries being an SLO. But if any breweries or any really cool lunch spots, because we have dinner covered. So if you recommend anything, I'll trust you for some reason. I feel that you could also write a food blog. I don't know. That's a compliment. So we're going to take a little break in a bit and then get into the part that we both quote unquote know a little bit about, the management part. But I just want to thank you again for doing this interview. I've been focusing so much on people behind the scenes, and we're going to get to the part that I've been focusing on a lot, which is the management. But I just think it's really cool to have our writer on this show, and I definitely want to get back into that because we'll talk about your management. We'll talk about your work for Alternative Press because a lot of people listening, I'm sure at least three of them subscribe to that. So that's really cool.
Sure.
And I'm super jealous of you in Seattle. When I was there, I had a burger with peanut butter on it, and it was good. It was so good. Like, people are like, ew, that's gross, and I just tell them to shut up because it's really good. So anyway, we'll be back.
Oh, no. I'll keep that in mind. I might have to check that out.
honestly, I mean, do you like peanut butter?
I do.
Do you like burgers?
I do, both independently.
Yeah, I know. You wouldn't go to an ice cream place and order a filet mignon ice cream, but I'm telling you that there's other things. Dan is recording this, and we did kind of the Wayne's World recording, like the 3, 2, 1. And I pictured Wayne and Garth bobbing their heads. Anyway, we're back with Waldman's Words, Atreyu Ryken. Let's talk about your management experience, because all I know really is your work with GLT. So let's go forward to 2017. What's up with Restless Management?
For sure. I used to work with GLT, and that was definitely towards the beginning of my endeavors in management. It's gotten a little more organized since then. Got a team I'm pretty confident in, and I'm currently working with a handful of bands, a couple like very small bands that are sort of off the books that I'm, you know, helping guide for, like, in developmental ways. And then a few others who are starting to gain some momentum this year. Pity Party from Oakland, California.
They're great.
From L.A. Intervention from Jacksonville. And then, yeah, a couple of smaller ones. I just picked up this band Hold Close from Springfield, Missouri. I'm super excited about. But that is my official roster that I can talk about, at least.
I mean, yeah, obviously the unofficial stuff, I don't recommend that. But the development stuff, I want to hear about that. Do you do consulting, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's kind of been on a per-band basis. I've done some press consulting. I've done just kind of random booking help and, like, giving advice on mixes and stuff, sending them around to people that might also be interested. But there's a few bands I'm working with who have releases in the works that I'm, like, waiting on some final mixes and waiting on some tour availability to kind of get going and get actually movement on these projects.
It's
a range of consulting and...
Well, that sounds cool.
Like that.
I mean, I've noticed a lot of what's going on with the new model for labels is sometimes... Because back in the day, when bands would get signed, there'd be a press release about band X being signed, and then their record will be out in the summer. But now a lot of the times when bands get announced, they're like, bands get signed, here's their new video, here's their first single, or here's their entire album, it's out today. So things have really changed in that regard. So I understand why, I guess, sometimes to build buzz, you got to give this instant gratification demographic as much as possible. Like, here's everything. Here's pre-orders. Here's the album. Here's a video. And here's their new cologne. So.
Yeah. I've noticed, I feel like it's a lot of testing. Mm-hmm. Like, there won't be a proven way to roll out a release, but I feel like a lot of people are trying different things because it's worked once or twice in the past. It's interesting. I haven't seen, obviously, the hard data or the results, but it's cool to see some creativity, at least.
Well, Beyonce, she figured it out. She's like, I have a big enough bass.
Totally.
I can release an album this day, and it'll be number one. And Avenged Sevenfold was actually, I believe, the first major rock band to do that, and obviously it didn't do as well as Beyonce. I mean, that's kind of a tough note.
Yeah, I feel
to
like you definitely need... I mean, Say Anything did it, and I feel like that did pretty well. I didn't look at the exact week one numbers, but everyone... I saw a lot of hype for that.
Yep.
And the tour did pretty well after it.
Yeah, and I believe Say Anything record, I mean, a lot of people were just like, whoa, what the hell? Like, scene bands can do this? I thought this was, like, reserved only for, like, a Rihanna or Beyonce, but... I mean, yeah, it worked. To be honest, I really like Say Anything. I wasn't as into that record, but I still thought it was really cool that they did that. But Avenged Sevenfold, I think they debuted at number 4 on Billboard. So, I mean, that says something for a band that just released it then, because they had no pre-orders, which contribute, obviously, to a high ranking.
Yeah.
So you manage... and. How many other managers do you work with? Do you co-manage, or do you just share a collective, or how does that work?
So a couple of the ones I shouldn't talk about right now, I'm co-managing with some other managers who have other bands. I've worked on a few projects with my friend Jason Sasai, who currently manages this band Overslept in Denver, and he's kind of the... my other partner in Restless Management.
Okay.
I'm working on Crooked Teeth with Keaton Kussler, and she actually works at Gabe Saporta's The Artist Group.
Yes.
And she's fantastic. Just one of the most hardworking, efficient working people I've ever gotten to work on something with. And so I'm pretty excited to be doing Crooked Teeth with her.
Is that affiliated with The Artist Group, or is that just separate, you and her?
It's just separate, her and I, right now.
Okay.
We'll probably figure that out down the road. But it started out super casually. Like, it was definitely a passion project for both of us, and it quickly became one of our most active, or definitely one of my most active clients. So we'll probably tackle that in this year.
Awesome. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. They haven't made any formal formal announcements, but I heard that Gabe is actually working with the former guitar player from the Academy Is, and also I think the singer of Kill Hannah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they're kind of behind Envy on the Coast's revival and all that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's great. Well, good for them, yeah. and good
and,
for you
oh,
for
Juliana
being...
Juliana Theory as well, I believe. I think I can talk about that. They're what? On like the Warped cruise coming up.
Wait, they're with Juliana Theory? That's a band for me. I saw them actually playing with Vendetta Red, Steel Train, and Something Corporate in
That's
Cleveland.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I love Emotion Is Dead. I love. So I'm a big fan. I saw actually their last show before they broke up.
No way.
Yeah, it was with Jameson Parker at the Troubadour. And I'm a huge fan of Juliana Theory. Okay, so management. So how's that transition? I mean, I imagine you're the same age as a lot of these people. So what's that like?
Yeah, if not younger than a few of them right now.
That's amazing. I'm older than every single person I manage. So it's different. They call me grandpa. So
good.
Yeah,
it might be a little easier to kind of conjure, respect and insight from that.
I mean, respect from artists is hard. But anyway, your turn. So...
Yeah, I don't think it affects it too much, to be honest, like age-wise at least, but I most of these relationships started out pretty much on like a friendly, I'll book you guys some shows and I'll help you guys with some pro bono press.
So informal.
Then, you know, if I see some momentum, I'll try to take things a little more seriously. Aside from like passion projects like Crooked Teeth, Pity Party was definitely another one of that. Like, Intervention was just strictly, I really liked the songs. I think I could help them get heard by a few more people. And then I saw some real momentum and kind of sat them down and we started working together more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty, it's amazing that you've been able to dip in so many areas. 'Cause when people ask me what I do, I'm like, okay, well, I manage a bunch of bands and I have my own Adobe show. So I think that yours is actually cooler because you're part of alternative press. So let's talk about that. Sick transition,
sure.
Bro, right? So how did that happen and what do you do specifically for the magazine?
How did that start? Someone just sent me an application for a news position there and I applied. And got it that week.
Gangsta. That's gangsta as fuck, dude.
And so I just joined their news team. Tyler Sharp, while he was still there, kind of trained me. And I was working with him and Caitlin Ralph, who is still on the news team, I believe. And then would work with their editors on strictly online, just like news. I was very responsible for a lot of articles that pissed a lot of people off. I got to see a lot of
is one of them
angry.
One of the ones that we worked on? The Candy Heart?
Oh, yeah.
Haha.
That did not piss a lot of people off. I shouldn't agree to that outright. I meant like more of listicles and like investigative journalism pieces that people didn't want to see and they're alt press. Everyone's got an opinion. But
I mean, everyone on the internet has an opinion no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, you could literally say free candy, and so I'll be like, candy's unhealthy, it causes diabetes. So no matter what, you're going to piss someone off. Whereas Dan
exactly,
loves
yeah.
free candy.
And then, while I was on the news team, which was about 6-7 months, I was also running their social media or helping with their social media, and it was interesting to see just how much a company like that, I think it's mainly because of their younger audience, gets some interesting responses to pretty much anything they'll post.
Well, I actually talked about the word interesting as sometimes it describes an ugly painting. So what what examples of that do you have specifically?
I mean, I think any artist we covered would be deemed a sellout, even if it was like – even if we were shouting out a smaller DIY band, which I think is just a really weird mentality.
Just because they're covered probably.
Yeah. I mean, just because of who's covering it. So outright, obviously, you're going to have a negative opinion if you're coming at it with that mentality. And then just, or like, AP would often try to move into the pop world. There was a lot of testing on like...
Well, Hey Violet, dude.
Before they started... What was that?
I said Hey Violet was on the cover, and so was 5 Seconds
yeah.
of Summer. So it's definitely different than Every Time I Die, so...
Yeah, it definitely was different. And they were testing out as far as, and I wasn't really involved with like the print magazine much at that point, but like seeing if readers responded to Halsey at all, and they didn't for the longest time, and now they're just starting to, which I think is pretty interesting, because I feel like that's way past when she was at her peak. I mean, I'm sure she's going to drop something huge and get that all back, but it wasn't near an album cycle, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense as far as marketing goes. But one, here's something that I've noticed about Halsey, I mean, just to veer a bit. I think it's quite amazing after listening to her music that a lot of people in the quote-unquote scene are into it. I'm shocked. I don't know how she did it. I don't know if it was her marketing, but it's very different. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's a lot of people who've really have embraced it in that world who I would think, like, wouldn't. Because, I mean, some of Halsey's stuff is, like, Selena Gomez. You know, and people would be like, screw that to her, even though she's worked with Forever the Sickest Kid. So it's just strange to me how some people are accepted and some people aren't. Anyway, I veer off track.
Yeah.
But Alternative Press, have you written anything that's gone to actual print, or do you just mostly just do online?
Mostly online. I've got some stuff pending right now. It's kind of up in the air. Just a lot of reviews and stuff mainly, some interviews as well. But yeah, mostly print, and then mostly like putting people through to like help try and set up premieres and stuff like that.
Got it. Well, would you say that that's what you spend the bulk of your time on? Because we all know our commissions from.
I mean,
oh, really? Okay.
Back when I was fully like dedicated news, that was kind of a 24-hour type situation. Like whoever was available to cover anything that was breaking. So I spent a lot of time on it while I was on news, but since then I've kind of stepped back, and it's definitely more of a passion project, just reviewing what I like and reviewing stuff and promoting stuff that I think deserves to be promoted that isn't already.
Well, speaking of that,
I wouldn't put that as like the bulk of my day.
Yeah, the bulk of my day isn't Adobe, though I want it to be. I want to be here 24 hours a day. But speaking of that, I guess passion projects. I mean, you can mention or give shout outs to bands that you're specifically working with. But are there any bands that you would say that people should watch for right now?
Absolutely, yeah. And I try to refrain from like plugging my
own
interests into AP just on an ethical level. But I definitely am trying to help shout out bands like Sundressed, who played Emo Night last
night. I was just going to mention them. That's awesome. They got the attention of Dashboard Confessional recently, too.
And insane. Yeah, they did. That was incredible. And they've got an LP coming out, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah, it's actually produced, believe it or not. I mean, now I could do the opposite of what you're doing, give myself a shout out. Producer I manage, Curtis. Curtis Douglas produced Sundressed, so there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hashtag blessed.
Mark, go on.
I said hashtag blessed because I'm an idiot. Keep going.
True. I saw them for the first time on their tour with Chase Hughlin, who was also a guest on your show.
Mm-hmm. Who's managed by Ross Roby, who I manage Curtis with. So, mind blown.
Yeah. Ross is great.
Oh, yeah. Ross is a good kid.
But, yeah, super stoked on them. Fossil Youth, who are on Take This to Heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited for what they've got in store. I mean, they already had a huge year with their LP release so late in the year.
Cool.
Let's see, who else?
It seems like you're really, really into Jeff Rosenstock, my Long Island boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. All over him. I went out. I was lucky enough to go out to, like, with 80 to 100 people and record gang vocals with him in April on
Worry,
which came out in the fall.
That was my album of the year. That was my favorite album. Yes, it was. And you know what's insane? Because my high school band, We Are Groove Animals, used to play with Arrogant Sons of Bitches. I've never...
Oh, wow.
Well, oh, wow, until you'll have another oh, wow. I never got to see Bomb the Music Industry, and I still haven't seen his solo stuff. I really want to. I know that Jeff is touring with the Menzingers, and I believe Roswell Kid, another band I'm really into. So there you
go. Yeah, I'm definitely going to the LA date for that. I'm excited for that.
Is it LA or is it like Pomona? I mean, are they playing in LA too? I'm not even sure.
I'm pretty sure they're playing the Regent. I could be totally wrong.
Okay. So, I mean, that should be fun. I hear that he's a quirky, awesome live performer, so that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I never got to see Bomb the Music Industry, but I've been a fan forever, and Arrogant Sons of Bitches and everything he's done. But he's still bringing it. Like, I saw him at Fest twice, and that was incredible out in Florida. Mm-hmm. And, like, I feel like he was really in his element there because that whole festival is...
The DIY.
Of all of his projects. Yeah.
Yeah, he is so DIY. It's amazing. I mean, he used to, at Bomb shows, I think they had a silk screening thing, and they would just make personalized shirts and basically burn CDs for people. And, I mean, he would give all his stuff away for free, and now he's on Psy One Dummy. And I'm just happy that he's getting some more notoriety outside of Long Island. Well, we're almost done with this. So do you have any advice for people who want to be like you or emulate you? Let's talk about, I guess, the writing front. Any advice for aspiring journalists or bloggers? What to do and what not to do?
I would say, I mean, first and foremost, just do it yourself. Like, if you need experience to get a position, just, you know, do anything you can to give yourself that experience. I started my own blog and worked, honestly, most, like, I was writing a lot, but most of my effort was put into branding and marketing and getting our SEO up and just getting enough notoriety to actually have a platform to then apply to larger publications with. So DIY all the way. I mean, and that's in anything. Like, I always wanted to work with bands on a managerial level, but never knew how to get into it. And I'd interned with production companies and promotion companies that did some management, and it never really went anywhere. It didn't open many doors, but just going out to shows, talking with bands, helping them out, and
how would you help them out?
Yeah.
But how, like, obviously going to shows and...
I'd route their tours. I'd help find more efficient ways to do merch, to do PR, to set up releases and stuff like that. And we just give insight on it, kind of anything. Like, it really depended on the band, but you know, if you have ideas on how bands can, if you think you know how a band could be doing something different, or how a band could reach a larger audience, by all means, just hit them up and start a conversation.
And it sounds like the way that, I guess, you work with your acts, I don't know if this is 100% accurate based on what you said, is that you kind of do trial basis with a lot of people. You kind of feel each other out, and
absolutely, yeah.
And I don't know. Do you have actual paperwork with them, or is it all pretty much
a couple?
Okay,
not all, but a few. And that's after, you know, a good period of time where we feel things out. And if I see that momentum's actually there, I don't want to, you know, waste their time either.
And you don't waste your own time with some. I mean, you might start working with someone that, you know, maybe it's just not a good fit because one man's gold is another man's trash. So you never know.
Yeah, there have been bands that, you know, it just wasn't a good fit, or bands that I definitely learned some lessons from where it just wasn't the right time for them to be managed. And, like, they were too young and have then gone on to do, you know, a lot better things. But some bands just aren't ready mm-hmm. to kind of be thrust into that.
You're preaching the choir, dude.
You know,
I get it.
A lot, you know, I learned by doing, for sure. I would put that as one of my biggest pieces of advice, is just do it. You're going to make a ton of mistakes, but you're going to learn faster than you would, you know, getting coffee for another manager, you know?
No, I would, I guess, take as a central tenet of what you're saying is just, honestly, you, like, to quote the water boy, you can do it, you know, just do it. Do it yourself. Try. I mean, I would rather fail on my own than fail because of someone else. So, you know,
absolutely,
just
do
as much as you can behind the scenes. Try to establish a name for yourself. I can tell you that when I started Walden Management completely on my own, and it still is to this day, a lot of people trusted me just because of the City Drive, the band that I was in, and just the successes I've had with others, and the fact that I worked at a law firm. But that was I mean, you're in your 20s. I didn't start my company till I was in my 30s. So that was after lots and lots of grinding. So it sounds like in your young life, you've done quite a bit of grinding and hashtag respect. So I'm trying to keep with the young demo.
In my grind, but
you are.
I'm excited for the future.
Well, I mean, when you stop grinding, I mean, what is there, right? So.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna cut this off now. Atreyu, give, I guess, your websites, your socials, whatever you want to give to the public listening, announce them. And again, thank you so much. You've offered a lot of insight, and I think that people listening definitely can learn something from this. So,
cool. Thank you very much again for having me.
Oh, stop.
You can find me pretty much anywhere at Atreyu, just my first name. Lucky enough to have that. keep an eye out on Pity Party, Crooked Teeth, Intervention, who are actually in the studio right now with James Paul Wisner. Super stoked on that.
Okay.
So just trying to think. Keep an eye on bands I'm not associated with, like Sundressed and Fossil Youth. And I wish I could plug more, but I'm on vacation mode and my mind is a little foggy.
All right, well, plug your vacation. I give it up to Seattle.
Check out.
Say hi to Fish for me. Give him a high five. And on behalf of Idobi, again, thank you. Waldman's words, next week we've got Todd Cavall from Ambiguous Management. Stay tuned every single Tuesday night, 5 p.m. Pacific time and 8 p.m. Eastern time.